I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Our colleague Noel is on an air venture. Get it? But he will be returning shortly.
They called me Ben. We're joined with our super producer, Paul Jetlag Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. It's no secret, Matt, that you and I both are longtime fans of conspiratorial pop culture. We love a secret society. We love an overarching intergenerational conspiracy. And I remember when the film adaptation of Watchmen came out. And I don't know about you, but that totally rocked me. I loved it.
Yeah, dude. Seeing that dude's giant blue, that was a great movie.
Was it giant? It looked kind of average.
Well, think about, it's really scale. If you think about scale. So like for him, it wasn't that big, but like for everybody else.
When he became a giant. Yeah. We're spoiling the most important part of the entire story. Yeah. So there's this question in one of the radioactive penis related story arcs of Watchmen. It's very much a B plot of Watchmen. There's this question about who watches the Watchmen, who holds those in power to account, the people who are supposed to create and enforce the rules, who makes sure those people also practice what they preach.
It's a great, great new version of that in The Boys. I think that entire series goes over that.
Yeah, and some people have their issues with the edgelordy aspects of the original comic, but it is a great read. If you enjoyed Watchmen, it does bring up some of the same questions. That's an excellent comparison. And the reason so much fiction talks about this is because it is a real-life question that has bugged pretty much every single modern society at some point, right? Should the king also follow the laws the king makes, right? Is it okay for the queen to murder someone, even though murder is illegal?
And especially the people who carry out the law, right? The ones who get to stop you and say, hey, you're going to jail. What happens when they do something a little off?
Right. When is it legal for a member of law enforcement to commit homicide, right? Or to speed, you know, there's all these if-thens. And in an earlier episode, something surprising happened to us on the way to recording. Some unrelated research led us to a strange tale of conspiracy and investigation that goes right to the door of Congress. It got real ugly. And it's still, I would argue, continuing today. The aftermath of a grand undercover operation known as AbScam, which is not, despite what the name might lead you to think, it is not a product for abs that you would see advertised on Instagram or something.
Yeah, a scam for your ab workouts.
A scam for your abs or a camera just for your abs. Anyway, here are the facts. AbScam is an extreme version of a sting operation, right, at heart?
Oh, that's exactly what it is. It's a sting operation and or entrapment operation, depending on how you feel about it, right? Depending on how you feel. Either the courts went one way, for sure. But that's
depending
what it
on
is.
Whether or not you're in Congress.
There you go.
That's going to influence whether or not you think it's entrapment.
That's exactly right. It's something that has been going on for a long time. It's a way to catch a criminal in the act, right? A sting operation, right? So you set up all of the requirements for a crime to go down, usually a transactional crime of some sort where money can be exchanged or a good can be exchanged for something illegal, right? And it's weird because on one side of that transaction, there are the police or the FBI or some other law enforcement official. And then there's someone who is being stung on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The term sting became famous in American culture in 1973 because of a movie called The Sting with Robert Redford and Paul Newman, I think. But the film itself is about a grift. It's not about a police operation. Still, people like the phrase sting operation, and it works. We see it all the time in fiction. Countless Law and Order episodes have someone going undercover, you know, usually when one of the actors gets a writing or producer credit and wants to show more of their range, so they write themselves into the episode a bit more. But even though you can't trust depictions in fiction, we can say that a lot of these programs get the rough aspects of a sting operation right. They have, you know, generally they have four major components.
Yeah, that's going to be a targeted group or maybe even one individual human being that are the people that are going to be, as I said, on the wrong side of whatever transaction is occurring. They require an opportunity for a crime to be committed, or at least some kind of exploitation by the police on an ongoing criminal action, right? So something criminal is going down, the police using usually, which is the third thing, an undercover agent of some sort getting into that operation, exploits the whole thing. And it's really important that you get evidence of whatever goes down. So hidden microphones, you know, wearing a wire is really important, or setting up a camera to capture the events, something like that. I would say that's a component of this.
100%. A second component is the demographic of victim or target. You want someone who is likely going to commit some sort of crime. You're not, for instance, if there's an undercover thing busting people buying drugs or busting people in the sex trade, then you would not send an undercover officer into like your local grocery store in the cereal aisle going, who wants fentanyl or heroin or whatever, or, you know, who wants to do some illicit acts, you know?
Yeah. Go into a library and just ask everybody if they want a party.
Yeah. Yeah. And still, it took me years to understand what that meant when people said, do you party? So then the third thing you want is, like you said, the undercover or a surrogate. There's some form of deception inherent to all sting operations, which makes them inherently conspiratorial. And typically...
Often somebody gets turned who's already in an ongoing criminal operation, and then that person becomes the surrogate, as you're talking about.
Yeah, you kind of string them along by hook or by crook, and that goes into the kind of carrot and stick stuff we talk about with spies getting turned, right? You could have somebody working in exchange for a reduced or sentence or dismissed charges. You could also have some kind of blackmail or leverage on them, right? Or you could just be straight up paying them, or all of the above. They'll find a way to get you if they need you. And the fourth aspect is the most cinematic, right? The spectacle of it. It climaxes when it ends in arrest. Abracadabra, B, abracadabra, right? And then all of a sudden, people are getting locked up because it turns out that Snakebite and the Worm were officers Grady and O'Malley the whole time.
Man.
The Worm. Or
in this case, the Sheik didn't even speak the language.
No, he's very much like Brad Pitt in Inglourious Basterds. But examples of this are common. They go across a range of crimes, and they're also not perfect. To their credit, the U.S. Department of Justice is pretty upfront about this. They say, look, these operations can be expensive. They can be really demanding and physically dangerous for personnel. And they're good at fixing case-by-case stuff, but they're not going to fix systemic incidents of crime. You know, if you do a sting operation on a known drug corner, then what's going to happen is that because that location is known to customers, other people are going to come in and fill the role.
Yep. Yeah. Or everybody's going to move to a different corner, you know, and just avoid that area completely. And then you got to set up shop over there. Another aspect of sting operations is that they can last for a long time. Some for months, some for years and years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's the problem of ethics, the line between a legit sting operation and entrapment, which is forcing someone to commit a crime and then punishing them for doing so. That line gets pretty blurry. Still, all told, sting operations have clear benefits. They can deliver massive results way, way beyond just busting people for selling dime bags or loose cigarettes.
Shout out to HSBC.
Right. Yes. Shout out to HSBC, which was once called a conspiracy theory. So I don't know, Matt, let's talk about some of the big examples of US stings. We just need to pull a couple here. They can go international. The FBI in 2012 had Operation Card Shop, which was a multi-million dollar online financial fraud case. They arrested 24 different people across 14 countries, across four continents. They called it the largest coordinated international police action in history, at least targeting cybercrime. And when you hear about the way these things work, it sounds like the people who got pinched were kind of doofy about it, right? Like it sounds as though they didn't think through things or they were way too trusting. But we have to remember, there's a lot of social engineering, right? There's a lot of, just like Scientology, there's a lot of nuance and a lot of style that goes into getting people to accept these false versions of reality. Like the cybersting thing, you would go to this website and you could buy or sell stolen credit card info, driver's license numbers, bank information, all the stuff you would need to create a fake identity, essentially, except for like printing the thing out, right? And then you would also have a forum, a little campfire, where you could discuss general hacking techniques.
It is crazy that they would think you could just go to a website and carry out this kind of illegal activity. Right. I wonder what kind of login there was for this website. Just a regular old username and password. That's it. Oh, now I'm buying credit card numbers and stealing identities and using, you know, potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars by charging all these credit cards. That's weird.
Well, a big thing about this we have to realize too is that this website became vetted by first a few members, And then through word of mouth, they vouched for it to people that they knew. That's what I mean with the social engineering. It operates on trust factors, right? So I know, you know, me and Haxor 69 Leet have been friends since back in the bulletin board days. And so I know this. I might not know their real name, but I trust them when it comes to recommending a good place to steal credit cards. Honor among thieves.
Reebok Reborn really gives this site a 10 out of 10 for credit card hacks or yeah. That's weird.
And they're a tough, they're a tough cookie. They don't just hand out those 10s the way they would hand out credit cards. So another operation, this one's even weirder. In 1998, NASA, the U.S. Postal Service, and Customs got together, and they did a sting operation. This isn't always just like the FBI or your local police department. They wanted to get a stolen moon rock back. It had been stolen and hidden in a vault in Miami. So in Operation Lunar Eclipse, they successfully nabbed the bad guys and brought the moon rock back.
Wow.
That's kind of a cool story.
Yeah, that is a cool story. I want to know more about it. That sounds awesome. we should look into that further, Ben. I like that a lot. Well, there's so many examples of this kind of thing, and especially this kind of thing that that skirt right up against that entrapment possibility or the entrapment angle. Because I remember when we would talk about the FBI going after people in Muslim communities, right? Where they would try and set up a sting operation by providing weapons or explosives to people that the FBI was basically grooming to take out terrorist action. It's a bit strange.
Is the FBI manufacturing terrorist, I think, is the name of our episode on that. And one thing that still sticks out to me about that is this is a high mark of character for the folks in those communities, right? The folks running the mosque would hear about this stuff, and they called the FBI. And they were like, there's some crazy people. They're trying to get our community members to become terrorists. You have to do something. And then the FBI would find out that it was
itself.
Yeah. Yeah. That it was the terrorist groomer. So yeah, there's a lot of controversy and it's very much not a perfect system. What happens when law enforcement forces the commission of a crime? How do we square ethically with the fact that police and authorities often engage in crime during one of these operations? They're buying drugs. They may end up doing drugs in front of the people they're trying to nab just to show they like to party, right?
Yeah. Well, and deep undercover is a terrifying thing. It's a terrifying place to be as an individual, right? And when you have to fit in with people who may not feel weird about committing murder, you never know what you have to get into in order to retain your cover. So it's a scary situation.
Yeah. Even when it's just kind of cynically milked for entertainment, you can see the tremendous potential for psychological damage and for physical danger that is posed to these operatives. I'm thinking
or having to commit a real serious crime because you have to, or else you're going to die.
Right, or having to explain in a believable way why you're not the right fit for that. Like one recent example, I saw a spinoff of Law and Order called Law and Order Organized Crime, and a character from another show is a deep cover operative for a big arc in the story. And this isn't spoiling stuff. You learn it very quickly in the show. He takes on the persona of an arsonist named Eddie Ashes. That's his street name. And so I'm wondering if it's like WITSEC. I guess if you're generating that kind of cover, you do need to choose your own name, but how ridiculous can you get with street names before someone says, I don't know if you're really a murderer. I don't know if Noodles is really a hitman.
Hmm. Yeah. Ashes was probably a prolific arsonist, I want to say.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You nailed it. So this is an issue too. The entrapment thing comes up a lot and it's been used as an attempted defense in U.S. courts. But I don't think many folks understand that entrapment laws as applied to the public and as written on paper, they don't really apply the same way to undercover operatives. Entrapment is a defense only when suspects are being pressured into committing or being implicated with a crime they would not have ordinarily have committed. And the legal definition of pressure varies depending on the judge, depending on the jurisdiction, et cetera, et cetera. It's like you're trying to prove intent, right? And you're trying to prove, you're almost trying to like multiverse it or quantum leap it and say, well, it's not entrapment because, you know, friggin' look at this guy. This guy was definitely, come on, he was going to do something, Your Honor. He was going to do something.
But as a law enforcement agent, if your team is the one that initially says, well, hey, what if we took some of your campaign funds and spread them out over here? Then that would probably be entrapment or viewed as entrapment, depending on which state you're in, obviously. But if it's like, you know, we've got all this money, what are we going to do with it? And then the target says, well, you know, I could invest it over here and then get you a return or hide it in this shell corporation. That's when it's not entrapment.
There's a kind of a long line to be a U.S. citizen. You heard of private immigration bills, right? so this leads us to the heart of another controversy, one that does not get talked up about often enough. What happens when the United States tries a sting, not just on members of the public, not just on street level criminals, but on the most powerful people in the country? This is the story of AbScam. So we're going to pause for a word from our sponsors, make sure Congress doesn't catch on until we're done recording, and we'll be back.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Here's where it gets crazy. You can go to the FBI directly to learn about AbScam.
Yeah, but they, the stuff that's written on the official FBI website differs a little bit.
It's a little back daddy.
And some of the stuff differs. I wanted to ask you about some of it, Ben, because let's say let's at least start with the FBI and see where we go from there.
Yeah, they've got a quote where you can see this on their website. They say, it all started in July of 1978. Maybe we get a little nostalgia music there, Paul. Perfect. When we set out to catch New York City underworld figures dealing in stolen art, we set up a bogus company in Long Island, Abdul Enterprises, thus the name Ab Scam, Abdul Scam, said to be owned by a wealthy Arab sheik who wished to invest oil money in valuable artworks. Then we recruited an informer who connected us with crooks willing to sell us stolen treasures.
Huh. So right off the bat there, I mean, that is essentially what AbScam was, how it started, right? I have seen in multiple places that Abdul Scam is not what it originally stood for.
That's 100% correct.
Okay. All right. So my understanding is that it was originally, and forgive me here, but this was just the way it was put out there. It was called AbScam because it stood for Arab Scam.
Yes, it was originally called Arab Scam. And we'll get to the name change, too.
Okay.
Where they sort of changed their story about it. And the FBI is not near as quick to report that name change. You know what I mean? The past, what is the old saying inside? I think it's the DOD. We don't lie. The truth changes. Which is a chilling thing to hear, right? But it's that kind of doublethink is more common maybe than people believe. Let's learn about the informant in question. They just call him an informant. They don't give this guy his due. Melvin Weinberg is just larger than life, man. He was a well-established con artist who got caught. He was jammed up. He later said he kind of reformed. He was hired with the by the FBI on the understanding that if he played ball and did well, he could get a probation deal and avoid some time in prison. And then also, he would be able to get charges dropped against his estranged wife, who left him for Wayne Newton. It's a long story.
Yeah, it feels like a Hollywood history. Story, right? It feels like a script. Oh, wait, that's because it was.
American Hustle.
Yeah, there you go. You can check out American Hustle with all the names changed and all the, you know, the story's a little different, but you can learn about a little about the character of Melvin Weinberg. You can also, by the way, watch a 60 Minutes interview with Melvin, which is, dude, the guy is great on camera.
He's about that life. He is very blunt. He's very transparent. He has always maintained that he felt no strong ideological motivation. He was in it for the money,
dude,
and so to crazy. keep his estranged romantic partner out of the pen. The operation begins low priority, kind of white collar sting. They have a budget that's $32,000. This is the 70s. And that's enough to prime the pump for a few months. And if we're being candid, that means it's the kind of thing where they catch who they can catch with the money. And if they catch some people, it'll be considered a success.
Yeah. And remember, at this point, with that $32,000, this is strictly focused on stolen art.
Mm-hmm. Which even the FBI at that time knew was a great way to launder money. So, cutting past the racially charged aspects of AbScam, which didn't age well, the FBI quickly realized they were onto something bigger than they thought. Within just a few months, they had recovered two paintings that together were worth $1 million. And Weinberg got a little bit of a vigorish too. He dipped his beak because the company that insured those paintings paid him 10 grand. And this is where he talks about this in these interviews. I think in the 60 Minutes one, he says, I realized I can make a living, you know, doing grifts for the government, basically.
Yeah, working for the FBI. Like, shoot, this is the best job I've had ever. I mean, it made sense.
I'm not going to jail because the people who run the jails are also my bosses, you know?
Yeah. But here's the deal. Weinberg is really good at this. I mean, he's just a con man, I guess. a scammer in himself. So he actually convinces the FBI to give him more money to do more stuff. He's like, I got other ideas, boys. Let's try this out.
Yeah, and he convinced them. They wanted to hear more about his ideas.
Yeah, and he convinced them. Well, he instructed them, like, all right, you like some of these ideas? Put $1 million into this bank account. I'm going to turn that $1 million into convictions, boys. That's basically what he said.
Mm-hmm. And he did raise a valid point, because he said, look, people are coming to me and I'm representing this Abdul Enterprises. They're going to ask, well, where do you bank, right? Where's your paper trail? Because you're supposed to be a legit business. So I'll need to be able to tell them Abdul Enterprises has a huge treasure trove of cash in Chase Manhattan Bank. Here's the account. Here's what the account looks like, you know, and that's the credibility we need. He was absolutely correct in this regard. And this paved the way, because as they were expanding, what they quickly realized concurrently is that the operation led them to an entire criminal network. Nepotism is big in crime, just like any other industry. Connections and networking are often more important than one's actual talents. And so these other members of the various criminal enterprises or Venn diagrams would introduce other people into the mix. Like, you know, you have to go talk to my guy over here. He's the expert on this particular type of crime. And, you know who you're really looking for is this other guy in Pennsylvania or in New Jersey.
Well, exactly. And they moved on from just dealing in stolen art to go into like fake bonds, right? Or stock fraud and all these other things like that, where you can see them starting to move up in the criminal underworld, right? Which is weird to think about. Up, or would you move down in the criminal underworld?
Well, I guess it's kind of like how there's not really a top or bottom to planet Earth if you look at it from space.
Okay. Okay.
They're going both into the heights and into the depths.
But they're up the ranks. Huh, all right, whatever.
I think the further up the ranks you go, the deeper into depravity you go. Right?
Oh, man. English is weird.
English is, doing its best. So yeah, this is nuts. One of their next big steps, they run into a group of people doing, like you said, white collar crime, fake bonds, and stocks. And Weinberg is all about expanding the program. The undercover work just with the fake bonds and stocks leads to $600 million worth of fraudulent securities being captured or prevented, mitigated, whatever words you want to use. And if you look at their seed money of $1,032,000, this is a pretty great return.
Yeah, a little bit.
Right?
A little bit.
It's pretty great. And so they expand. And at the same time, Abdul Enterprises is making a name for itself in your local criminal community of the Northeast. They're branching out investigations into DC, into Jersey, like we mentioned. Maybe it's time we talk a little bit about the actual operation. What do you think? How does Weinberg do the approach?
Well, let's say he put on several costumes, right? He tried a couple things out, didn't really like them so much. They didn't work as effectively as he wanted them to, until he landed on Kabir Abdul Rahman. This guy is supposedly a sheikh from the Arab Emirates. And this guy, oh boy, he's a millionaire businessman. He's got all this money and he wants to launder it through whatever it is that you're doing. He just needs to get money moving through the U.S.
Right. He needs that money clean. He needs it invested in a stable economy.
Yeah.
Do check out our episode on real estate and foreign investments.
Well, and the idea that, just to keep this in mind, we're talking about late 70s. So picking someone from the Arab Emirates who happened to be, you know, royalty, or at least close to royalty, it was a perfect idea. It really was a perfect idea, because money was just being printed in that region of the world at that time, because of oil prices and what was happening with oil.
Yeah, yeah. And important to note that Weinberg did not say he was the sheik. He was the representative. The agent,
he's an agent.
The right-hand man of the sheik, which also further lends to credibility, although that might seem counterintuitive. If the sheik is really powerful, you're not going to meet that guy at the beginning. You're going to have to earn that meeting. So one of the scenarios was that the sheik wanted to loan out his money and generate interest. Very common in the Western world, but according to this grift, the sheik was very concerned about Islamic laws against usury, which is charging egregious interest rates. So he needed bogus or forged certificates of deposit to withdraw cash from Muslim banks to invest somewhere else. And then other people, it's really based on what Weinberg would think would work for that person, for their perspective and personality. So other folks would be told, hey, this sheik wants to just have a secure place to invest his millions and millions of dollars, or he wants to buy art, or, you know, this guy's really fancy and really wealthy, but he's a dirty old dog and he wants to finance porn.
Yeah, well,
and that
he
worked for someone. Yeah,
well, yeah, and this is, you know, we can make porn over here. It's just can't really do it where he is. So we need you to do it, and he's got all the money for it. Here, just take it. Yeah, it's a lot of money. You can have it.
Yeah, yeah, and eventually, as they're expanding, they add a second fictional sheik, Yasser Habib. Also, again, totally made up. This might sound nuts today, but we have to remember people across the planet, we're all very well aware of oil money. The OPEC embargoes of 1973 and then 1979 caused the price of gas to explode. And so it was common knowledge that a lot of people who were already kind of higher ups in different oil producing countries in the Middle East had suddenly become even more wealthy, cartoonishly so. They were flush with cash. It was a real thing. And while this scam might sound weird today, we have to realize there were a lot of other real world examples of tremendous amounts of money coming out of this part of the world, right? Entire structures being purchased in London, which was still a very expensive place, New York, et cetera. And the sheik himself, here's the problem. So we've made up this figure, just like, you know, if you're starting a good cult. At some point, these folks are going to want to meet him. Criminals are big on the face-to-face aspects, right? If they're dealing with other criminals they respect. So they've got to find someone who can pass off as a sheik, preferably an FBI undercover operative. Problem is, not a lot of people at the FBI speak Arabic. Certainly not fluently enough to sound like a guy who grew up in the Arab Emirates, United Arab Emirates.
Or look like someone who grew up there. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the FBI scrambled basically, and you can see this part in American Hustle where they just kind of get someone that kind of in a way could look the part and just pretend like they're really quiet. They just don't talk much. The sheik doesn't talk very much because I think the FBI had three people play at least the primary sheik for quite a while.
Yes. Yeah. Three different people. And that worked because the folks that the quote unquote sheik was meeting were not talking with each other. And they were calling this Arab scam, AB scam, for quite some time. You asked earlier why the name change occurred. It's because the American Arab Relations Committee forced the FBI to stop being as racist. They said, why are you guys calling it an Arab scam? That's kind of messed up. There are a lot of Arab Americans here who are just living their lives. And we don't want to be associated as a demographic with this weird, weird thing. So the compromise they landed on is the FBI would pretend they always called it Abdul scam based on Abdul Enterprises.
There you go. Band-Aid working?
I don't know. I think it's pretty nice to call it a Band-Aid. Because... Band-Aids, whatever. Yeah.
It just stinks, but whatever.
Yeah, it does stink. And then while all this is playing out, the FBI finds themselves meeting criminals, introduce them to more criminals, and then to even more criminals, and then to politicians.
That's the cream of the crop right there.
Yeah. Politicians, you heard that right. the folks who are supposed to be watching the Watchmen. Turns out they also are more open to a good old-fashioned grifting than we might have assumed when we
larceny.
Voted for them. Larceny. Yeah.
It's in my blood.
It's in my blood, yes. How do you think I got this job? Like my father before me and his father before him. It's all about a grift.
All right, so how did these politicians get caught up in an ab scam? We'll tell you right after a word from our sponsors.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Mother's Day is coming, and Mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get Mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get Mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting Mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get Mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for Mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for Mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
And we're back. All right, Ben. What's going on? Elected officials?
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. So to get to the officials, we got to meet another guy named William Rosenberg. William Rosenberg, kind of a white-collar crime dude. You know, he's a white-collar crime enthusiast, let's call him. Weinberg knows about this guy and targets him, and he says, hey, Willie, you will get $7 million worth of commissions if you can help my principal, the Sheik, make a $100 million investment, because he wants to turn Atlantic City into the Vegas of the East.
Whoa,
East,
really?
East.
Vegas of the East? $7 million? I'm in, said William Rosenberg.
But just like any internet scam today, there's someone who wants to give you all this money.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a holdup.
Oh, no.
I know. This poor Sheik, he needs a guarantee that the hotel casino he's trying to build is definitely going to get a gambling license. Because a casino without a gambling license, you know, it's like
a hotel.
It's just a hotel at that point. And so Rosenberg, say what you will about the man, is a very solution-oriented guy. And so he says, look, this is no problem. And I have an awesome grifter voice for this, but we're not going to do it. He says, I know a local politician who's definitely on the team. This guy's also solution-oriented, and he can help smooth things over. He's actually the mayor of Camden, my good friend, Angelo Arricchetti.
Oh, Arricchetti. Arricchetti.
So you're the FBI, right?
Yeah.
And you're trying to, you know, you're trying to bust somebody for shady financial dealings because, again, you think they're a likely offender. You know that, you know, you strongly suspect they've done stuff like this in the past. You just can't prove it. And now all of a sudden you get Shyamalan'd and they're like, yeah, I've got another guy to add to this heist. The mayor.
The mayor. The guy that runs Atlantic City. Cool. Cool. All right. Yeah. Set that up. Let's do that. And you can read about all of this in a book called The Sting Man. That was written by Robert W. Greene. This whole story, like this book, is nuts. It is really worth your time. If you like reading books, check it out.
And Arachetti gets a very gets some weird TLC in Greene's book, which mm-hmm. is probably one of the best books there is out about this case. He is said to have been really foul-mouthed, cursed like a sailor. He was a megalomaniacal person, extremely taken with himself, and he was a crook through and through. Our pal Weinberg actually came to really enjoy Arachetti because they knew where each other stood, essentially. He's like, look, we're both after the bag, right? He's like, yeah, we're after the f-ing bag. And he's like, I like this guy.
I think Arachetti is the one who was quoted in that book as saying larceny is in my blood or something like that.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. You're right. He also said, look, I'll be your rabbi. I'll give you Atlantic City. Without me, you do nothing.
Well, all right then.
Right. So he was like one of those people who's like, I could be your best friend or your worst enemy. And you're thinking, dang, man, we're both in line at this Chipotle. Calm down. But, so his price is $400,000. Arachetti wants 400 grand off the top to get things going. And it turns out Arachetti was very much open for business of all types and didn't have one specific kind of graft or crime that he focused on. He kept going to agents and saying, well, hey, what about this thing? Just like Weinberg, he was a man of ideas.
Well, yeah. Basically, okay, so you got a casino, right? You're going to run a casino? That's great. But what about money laundering? Have you thought about doing that? What about counterfeiting? You going to counterfeit some money? Because we could do that. I mean, that's pretty easy with a casino. What about the ports?
And they say, which ports? He's like, the whole port of Camden. You guys ever want to run drugs through there? I mean, that is pretty smart, right? You want to get in on the ground floor.
He's just like, okay, Mr. Mayor, sure. Right,
exactly. Don't you have to take care of the roads or your constituents or something? So Arachetti becomes the transformative entry point for the real meat of Abscam and why so many people in power are afraid of it today. All of a sudden, they realize this could be a political sting. And he connects through Arachetti, Weinberg, and the FBI start getting connected to a whole slew of U.S. politicians, elected representatives who are down to clown.
Yeah. Oh, my. Good golly. Well, and part of, I guess part of this connection is why, and leveling up, maybe I would say, within the underworld and even the political world, it's causing the story to have to change, the fictional motivations of Abdul Enterprises, right? It's starting to alter itself and it's kind of been continually changing. So at this point, the fictional sheik has, you know, they're moving in, they're getting their gambling license, they're getting their casino. Well, now the sheik wants to become an American citizen. Are there any strings that can be pulled in the upper echelons of government that could allow for this?
Yeah, any politicians who could give us a hand in exchange for a consulting fee, which mm-hmm. is what they're called, right? Mm-hmm. It's because you don't ever want to hear the word bribe. And people are very careful in those conversations to never use specific language. So we'd love you to consult with our good friend, the Sheik. Dude, they're gunning for Congress at this point. They're saying that's the way these operations work. You described it beautifully. They transform the desired or like the purported desire so that it is appropriate to the position of the target, the position and abilities. If you go to, say, a congressman and you say something like, hey, I need help getting some art, then they're going to rightly ask, why are you going to me? You know, go. I have a friend at the museum. Go ask the people at the museum.
Yeah, get out of here. Yes. I don't do anything with casinos. Sorry. It's not my not my deal. Not in Camden. Sorry about that.
So each congressperson who got approached was told the sheik's outfit would pay them large sums of money as a consulting fee for what they called private immigration bills to let not just the sheik, but associates, foreign-based associates of Abdul Enterprises into the United States. They would also pay to get building permits and licenses of various sorts for operations in Atlantic City. Some of those licenses were for real places that Abdul Enterprises wasn't actually associated with. And some of them, at least one of them, was famously a place that was entirely made up. The Penthouse Boardwalk Hotel and Casino.
This is a terrible name.
The Dream of the Sheik. Yeah, it does sound kind of like Mad Libbed or ChatGPT'd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, for sure. And but what something interesting here is that the price of bribing a congressperson went down a little bit at some point, right. Which is weird to me. I thought they would have to increase the price, right, to get people to continue playing with them or to get higher level people playing with them, but they were originally paying $100,000 to have one of those consultations, right, for some of these private bills. But then they ended up reducing it down to $50,000, which is a bit weird. And you can even, right now, you can go on YouTube and find a video of one of those $50,000 exchanges, which is, it is very strange to watch.
Yeah, it looks staged. It like, how could you... Even if you have no background in surreptitious things, wouldn't you think it's weird that these people you don't know really well are giving you a suitcase of money?
Yeah.
How or would that the, not trip a wire?
Ben, in the one I saw, there's an agent sitting at a desk with a hidden camera, and he's like, hey, I'm the agent. It's this date, 1980, and this is what's happening. And I've got $50,000 in these five stacks of bills. I'm going to put them in this desk. When they come in, we're going to talk about exchanging the money. Here we go. And then they have the whole thing, and then he literally just pulls out $50,000. In like, you know, it's $50,000, y'all, in 100s. Is not that big a stack of money.
No,
which is mind blowing.
Yeah. It's humbling to see it.
It really is. Like, oh God.
Especially if you're the kind of folks and entities like us who don't regularly handle $50,000 in cash.
That's why you get it in 20s, because that'll really make you feel good about yourself.
Flex on them. Flex on them a little. Yeah. We've got to say, yeah, this does look cartoonish. And the implications are damning. I have two theories about the $100,000 to $50,000 thing. The first is that, well, the FBI has a budget, and maybe, as their critics say, an axe to grind. So maybe this is some styling on it. Maybe this is like, well, how cheap is your integrity, you know, Mr. Congressperson, or whatever. And the second idea, which I don't know, this is all speculation on my part, but the second theory I have is that what if $100,000 a pop was such a good deal that it stood out too much?
Mm.
What if, you know, other members of Congress started talking to each other and someone said, I don't know, Mulaney style, there's someone new in town and they keep giving out $100,000 a pop. This is not the usual kind of consulting fee I would take. So maybe they're trying to blend in just a little bit longer to keep the camouflage up.
Mm.
I don't know. What do you think about that one?
I think you might be right. I think you absolutely might be right, Ben.
You don't think they just blew through that $1 million?
No. No. You got to be careful.
maybe it was a race to the bottom. I wonder if like the last guy they tried to bust, it was, you know, a Sears gift card.
A microwave? Which is a real thing, a real part of the investigation. Yes. It's real. Microwaves that had their serial numbers removed, as well as a couple of speakers and like stereo receiver sets.
Yeah. And they also tried to who was it from Penthouse that they targeted in this? Yeah, the editor of Penthouse, unrelated to the politics. They tried to bribe and turn the publisher of Penthouse, and he absolutely said no.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, his specific quote was, "Are you out of your mind?"
Yeah.
And then later he sues the federal government for trying to bribe him.
That's right.
So the FBI is taking these meticulous notes, and Matt, I think we know they recorded each exchange, but I believe it's the first time in U.S. history that that kind of videotaping you're talking about of government officials physically taking bribes actually occurs.
I think so. And it is nuts. The one I saw was with John Murtha, and he's offered $50,000. And after he's offered this money, he goes on like, "Oh, well, you know, we're not going to do business yet like that. Let's do business for a while. Then, you know, we'll see. If we get to that level, basically, we're all take cash money from you in that way. Let's make sure this is all in the up and up." But then he talks about, "Well, you know, I'm on the ethics committee, so I've seen this kind of thing happen before where it goes really bad." She's like, "Wait, are you or are you not going to be taking money from these guys? Because you're definitely doing dirty work for them." It's very, very weird to watch.
Some doublethink at play, you know, in some of these situations. And this documentation shows multiple sting ops, you know, recorded before a live studio audience, right? There's some that occur in a house in a pretty nice neighborhood in D.C., some that occur at a yacht off the coast of Florida, and a lot that occur in these kind of innocuous hotel rooms in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. In the end, 7 very high-level U.S. politicians get jammed up. 6 congressmen, and believe it or not, folks, 1 actual U.S. senator. And senators, not to sound too cynical, are usually pretty good at parkouring out of that kind of conviction. Or
yeah, you can have somebody do it for you, right? On your behalf. Yeah. And then, it was my aide, and that bad aide. No, why'd you do that?
On the inside, we just call it trading, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So I guess we should read the list of the people who got convicted before we go into the nitty gritty here.
Oh, sure. Let's start from the bottom. Richard Kelly of Florida.
Yes. Then John Murphy of New York. All of these folks, except for the senator, are congressional representatives.
Mm-hmm. Frank Thompson of New Jersey gets a bit of an honorable mention here because Frank refused the offer the first time. But then when Weinberg came back around, he accepted.
That's why they call him Frankie 2 times in the joint. No, they don't. They probably just call him Thompson. But yeah, I don't know about that one. I don't know whether that was maybe just like part of a negotiation tactic or we don't know the details there, but
it's probably the same deal with Joe Murtha, where they're smart, right? Everybody on this list has navigated politics, which is not an easy thing to do, right? So I imagine that, I don't know, that kind of thinking occurs all the time, just being cautious when you're being offered money.
Come to me correctly in a way that I can legally agree with, right? Or have the appearance of such. Anyway, next we've got Representative Michael Myers of Pennsylvania, Ozzy to his friends. Not that Michael Myers.
Oh, okay. Or not that Michael Myers. Myers, Michael Myers the third. We also got Raymond Lederer of Pennsylvania.
We've got John Jenrette of South Carolina.
And the big one. You called it out, Senator who?
Harrison Williams of New Jersey. Pete to his friends.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And that's not all, right? There's a much larger list. There are other mayors, I think, and other people that got caught up.
Yeah, five other government officials, mayors, members of city councils. They got indicted and convicted. And our boy, the mayor of Camden, was the first one to get convicted. Which maybe he knew it was a short-term grift because he really did. He was a go-getter. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, he was like the Wikipedia of crime. If you're interested in this, you might also enjoy, or maybe like a Netflix recommendation of crime.
Yeah.
So this also bears pointing out, with the exception of the first person we named, Richard Kelly of Florida, all of these politicians were members of the Democratic Party, at least in name. At least in name. You could make a pretty solid argument that they were actually the Green Party. Just a bad joke about dollars. Leave it. I mean, that's the argument the courts made. And each defendant had a separate trial because they each had a different kind of deal with the sheik, some mining interests, some real estate stuff, etc. Eventually, the American people win the day. By 1981, all of these folks we named were convicted of bribery and conspiracy. Kelly did try to use the entrapment argument for his case. It didn't work. And there were some people who escaped indictment, Murtha being one of them.
Oh, yeah, because they never took the money. In that video with Murtha I'm talking about, he refuses the $50,000. It is on video, and you can watch it right now, and it feels weird that he's even in the meeting, but he at least doesn't take the money.
Yeah, he doesn't take the money. And the other person who doesn't take the money is South Dakota Senator Larry Pressler. The news rocks the United States, and there would be consequences, but maybe not the consequences we would have hoped for. Abscam wins 19 convictions. And as the memes say, Congress took that personally. They made a spectacle of it, not talking about the need for greater accountability in Congress, but denying and delaying FBI appointments as a way of getting back to them, opening hearings on whether or not the FBI should have even been doing this. They also were able to touch parts of the media to attack the credibility of Abscam as an operation. And the FBI itself. And the American public, you know, the court of public opinion is in session. And then, you know, just picture all these people across the United States watching the news or listening to the radio, and they learn, oh, this Weinberg guy, this absolute con man, is at the helm of this? He's in charge? That's a lot. That's a tall milkshake.
Well, and you can imagine, you know, the heads of giant multinational media corporations could never take part in any kind of weird shenanigans like this, right? No, they wouldn't do that. But this is where entrapment becomes a huge deal as a talking point, as a point of discussion, right? What is entrapment? Is this entrapment? It sure feels like entrapment.
Yeah, Congress is very focused on that. Like, guys, what, you know what, we don't talk about enough, just money aside, and I don't really know what that has to do with the conversation. Money aside, let's talk about entrapment. That's the real problem here. So they do the matrix dodge and pivot for this. Weinberg does pretty well. He gets out of a 3-year prison sentence, and he's paid $150,000 for his time.
Wow.
Which is pretty decent, right? 50 grand a year.
Yeah, accepted.
In the late 70s. Yeah. And I hope they gave it to him in a 3 stacks of $100 bills. But behind the scenes, you know, as we have been talking about earlier when we discovered this story, things got even uglier. Congress was out for vengeance. It was not their primary concern that elected representatives of the most powerful nation on the planet might be easily swayed by as little as 50 grand. It was their concern that the FBI was getting above its station and going out of pocket. They forced the U.S. Attorney General to issue new guidelines that hamstrung undercover operations against politicians. They just seemed less concerned, and the concerns about entrapment are valid, sure, but they seemed less concerned with protecting the American public and more concerned with protecting their colleagues and possibly cutting off any future investigations into some of their own dealings. Congress threw a tantrum.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're basically saying, hey, FBI, we got to run for office over here. We got to run cities and states and the federal government. We got to make all those things happen. And some of those things require a little handshake deal. Okay. You can't be looking at us. You can't go undercover and try and catch us doing what we do best. Shaking hands, making money. I mean, really, how do you think the wheels on this country run? It's through greasing them. You got to grease them wheels.
Who do you think you are?
That's it. That's it.
Who do you think you are? You listen here. If I catch you inside Rhode Island after dark, yeah, we're going to have a very different conversation, my friend.
Do you like I mean? Your operating budget, FBI?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But their mission of vengeance backfired a little bit because it made AppScam a bigger story than it might have been otherwise. And that gets us to, I think, the most disturbing part of this. Folks, I mean, Matt, Paul, conspiracy realists playing along at home, why haven't there been more investigations like this? This is the only one of its kind.
Yeah, because Congress set forth a ton of rules of what you can and can't do during an undercover investigation from that point forward. You're not going to, you fool me once, basically, is what they said.
Can't be fooled again.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
So the rules, these are called general guidelines. They kind of get a uniform approach to undercover operations, which again is a valid thing, but they formalize procedures that you have to jump through to conduct an undercover op to avoid future controversy. And those rules, however you feel about them, have made something on the scale of AppScam pretty much impossible today. And if you look at it, officials in modern day America have far fewer abilities to hold the powerful accountable. And you can make a solid argument, or a pretty compelling argument at least, that this is by design. Like, there's a reason this is a thing. And even now, you know, it's nuts. People are divided on the FBI. Did the FBI just, was it operating in its own kind of gangster way? Was it trying to pay Congress back for investigating COINTELPRO, police brutality? There aren't really what we would understand as good guys at the top of a lot of these situations, you know. And that's not to denigrate members of Congress. Remember, there are a lot of congressional representatives. There are lots of senators. They're not all some monolithic entity out to grift people. And the FBI is not full of a bunch of weird Hooverites or whatever, you know?
But
the FBI kept piling on those guidelines, right? They kept putting more rules in. And the last ones were instituted in 2001. I don't know, man. It just seems like the FBI made a grand conspiracy to convict crooks in office of conspiracy. And then Congress started a conspiracy of their own. And they sort of taught the American public, knowingly or unknowingly, that they should be watching, like that Congress as the watchman should watch itself.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Self-regulation, baby. That's the name of the game here in America. I think, by the way, those guidelines, you can look them up. The Smith guidelines, the Thornborough guidelines, and the Reno guidelines. They all started in 1983. And as you said, Ben, ran to 2001. Here's what I'm going to put forward. You ready? AppScam was an inside job by Congress to get the FBI. They entrapped the FBI to investigate Congress so they could put forth the guidelines so that they could never be investigated again. Boom.
I think we've solved it. I think that's it. And this is one of the many reasons that you and I will probably never run for Congress.
No. And yeah, we can never be in the Secret Service.
That's for other reasons. I might mosey into public office, but I'm certainly not going to run. It doesn't feel worth the effort.
I could see you moseying.
They could saunter in. Well, I reluctantly accept the nomination for comptroller. let's keep writing ourselves in as comptroller and just hope we never have to actually deliver on that weird inside joke.
Crunch some numbers one day.
cop some trolls, man. Wait, what does cop troller do again?
It's an accountant.
It's way less fun than like the idea that one, trolls are real, and two, there's a government job to just compensate them.
The computer troller. Okay.
Okay. Well, with that, folks, we would love to hear your thoughts. Do you believe that Congress purposely hamstrung the FBI after Abscam? Do you think that, what do you think an investigation like this would find in the modern day? You know, I think that's one of the biggest questions. And are you surprised that it only took 50 grand for some of the nation's most powerful people to become criminals? Let us know. Facebook, internet, YouTube, TikTok, until the Restrict Act goes through. All the hits, all the good ones. If you don't sip the social meds, never ye fear. You can call us directly on a telephonic device.
Yes, dial 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, it's a voicemail system. You've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool name. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's not your real name. No government names on our voicemail, please.
Standard policy.
Also, let us know if you give us permission to use your voice and message on the air in one of our listener mail segments. If you've got more to say than can fit in 3 minutes, why not instead send us a good old-fashioned email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.